Welcome to the Full Button Podcast, where at any time it could go haywire. Now here are your hosts, Jay Surf and Twan.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Full Button.
I'm Jay Surf, and I'm with my good buddy, Twan. What's up, man?
What's up, Jay? How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. Am I Jay Surf coming in clear?
Yes, you are.
That's a big shout out and a big thank you to Jeff Wedge, who donated my new microphone. So I hope that I'm coming in real clear.
Crystal clear.
Yeah, let's actually, what are you drinking over there?
I got a nice Modelo. I've been on this Modelo kick for, I don't know, the last 2 months or so.
Yeah, NFL, right?
NFL, no fucking lime.
No fucking lime. Well, cheers, brother. I got a nice cannabis-infused margarita right now. So cheers to you and cheers to Jeff Wedge for, you know, donating this generous microphone to the Full Button.
So thanks, cheers. Wedge.
We all pushed the Full Button last night. You ever done that? It's this little button, you know.
What did you listen to today?
So today I was listening to the 85 Jones Beat Show.
Nice.
Awesome. Dude, such a good show. You know, such a good show. The audio's good, you know, ton of energy in Jimmy and the band.
Yeah.
The set list was great, and he does probably, in my opinion, you know, 85 was the year of, like, Live by the Bay. And
it was, yeah, it was Live by the Bay. So this show that's recorded that you're listening to is actually the full set list from that tour.
Correct. Right? Because, and, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. Live by the Bay this will be a good other topic to discuss, just the whole Live by the Bay thing. But,
yeah,
you know, the originals, I believe, were lost in a fire. But one of the things lost in that tape was this melody he did. And it was like an 8-song medley, which, you know, he really doesn't do. You know, he used to do medleys back in the day, and it'd be three, 4 songs or, you know, into the latter part of, you know, the, you know, 1990s into like the 2000s.
But, yeah.
You know, this was, dude, it was Nautical Wheelers. It was Tin Cup.
Oh,
went
nice.
Into Boat Drinks, Banana Republic.
Bangers. Yeah.
You know, slowed it down a little bit, you know, with Banana, and then into The Captain and the Kid. And then out of nowhere, you know, you're sitting there listening and he comes out with Somewhere Over China, you know, mind blown. And then, you know, he finishes off with He Went to Paris and Cowboy in the Jungle. So, but, you know, the way he transitions from song to song and you don't know what he's playing until he starts.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about medleys that I love that he does.
So speaking of Live by the Bay, you have that actually on Laserdisc, right?
I have it on Laserdisc and I actually have it on vinyl. It was a radio show in Miami. Yeah. And it's only about, I think it's probably 3 or 4 songs aside. It's a double LP.
Yeah.
So it's not the full show that's on the VHS tape.
Right. Okay.
But it's still pretty cool though.
Yeah. Do you have a laser disc player?
I do not.
You don't?
No.
I asked you that last episode. I'm just busting your chops.
You know, it's funny because I every once in a while I'll look like on eBay and just see if there's laser disc players out there. And there are.
Yeah, I do. I think if you can snag one for like under $50, it might be worth it.
Just to watch
Live by the Bay on it.
I know, and better than VHS, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But if anybody wants to check out the full Live by the Bay show, it's definitely on YouTube now. So if you've never seen that, we really encourage you to go check that out because it's just 1985. You know, what a great, cool venue. What an amazing show to be at, right? People just kind of floating on boats and floating in the water. And I think even after the show, there's that famous picture of Jimmy kind of jumping in, right?
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think Live by the Bay will definitely have to be a full episode in itself.
Oh, for sure, man.
We just like to say that Buffett needs to start going sailing more. He's out there with those rednecks, and he's losing touch with the sea.
He's been out on our boat before.
Yes.
Jimmy Buffett forever!
I remember back in like the late 90s, I think it was, he was doing a Beatles melody. I think he had three or four Beatles songs in there that he was doing.
She came in through the bathroom window. Did he do that one?
Yep. There was Polythene and Pam was in there.
Now, you and I, speaking of the Beatles, you and I share a kind of fond connection to Beatles cover that he did. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I don't.
Rocky Raccoon, my friend.
Dude, no, yeah, Rocky Raccoon, like his version of it's awesome. And I think it's the same one. I have a live version of it. I'm pretty sure it's the same version that, you know, Peter Mayer did a Beatles cover album. And that was in there, and it was him and Jimmy. So I'm pretty sure it's the same. I think they've only done it once. That's one of those songs I forget about, and then it'll just pop up in my shuffle. And I'm just like, man, I'm like, it's such a good version of it. He does it really well.
Yeah. There's definitely certain covers that he does really well, but I think that might be another time and another place.
Yeah.
You know, for me personally, I think Marvin Gardens is Jimmy. Jimmy is Marvin Gardens.
Marvin Gardens is barely alive.
Yeah, man. So let's just dive right into the life and times of that unknown drunken calypso coke snorting poet, a man who was once criticized for writing songs about drugs, sex, and booze during a time when cocaine was as easy to buy as Key Lime Pie in Key West. The man responsible for penning songs like "Why Don't We Get Drunk and Screw," "Please Take Your Drunken 15-Year-Old Girlfriend Home," "The Lawyer and the Asshole," "The Man," "The Myth." In my opinion, the goat of all goats, Marvin fucking Gardens.
We get criticized for writing songs about drugs and sex and booze, but sorry, that's the ballpark I play in.
Man, I got to tell you, I'm super stoked. I'm excited. You know, this is our second episode because, you know, I just really love the whole folklore of what I consider to be one of Jimmy's, you know, best created fictional characters ever, in my opinion.
And I'm right there with you. You know, I've been excited since, you know, the last time we talked that, you know, we said, hey, this is what we should do for the next one. And obviously I've been thinking a lot about it. And
yeah,
I'm excited to talk about this. You know, it's funny because when, you know, when you get into Buffett and you really start to kind of, you know, you're a fan in the beginning, just, you know, listening to the everyday songs that are out there and you start digging into it. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, you jump into this, you hear about this Marvin character. So it's kind of cool to go back and see who he was, you know? So.
Yeah. And, you know, when you and I decided to do this podcast, we said that, you know, we really wanted to dig deep, right? And we really wanted to kind of go deep into that rabbit hole and talk about things, you know, that you might not be able to find by just scratching the surface, right?
For sure.
And I think that, you know, let's be honest, there's probably a good chunk, right, of people out there who would consider themselves, you know, Jimmy Buffett fans who might not know who Marvin Gardens is or was.
Right, or what the back, you know, what that has to do with Jimmy, you know, so I think it's a good topic and,
So let's just let's kind of jump right into it.
We're hot in Vegas. We really are hot in Key West too right now. Yeah.
Shouldn't be back here alone.
there's some things that I love in this crazy world, and you know, that's my family, my son, you know, weed, women, but I love Marvin fucking Gardens. Like, I just love the whole folklore around him. I love, you know, the stories that I've read about, that, you know, doing some kind of research on, talking to former, you know, bandmates and crew members. You know, those guys just have some really incredible stories. And by the way, it's confirmed. I mean, Jimmy, for a while, you know, like, this was his nickname. In those, especially in those early days, you know, he went by Marvin Gardens. And, you know, I asked some guys who were around him during that time period, and they said, yeah, it was definitely kind of like a thing.
Well, yeah, you know, Jimmy was, I mean, you got to remember, you know, mid-70s, this guy was a rock star. Like,
yeah.
Back in the day of rock stars, when, you know, all these documentaries that you see on TV,
yeah,
and you see what that behind the scenes looks like that's what he was living, you know?
Yeah,
and
so in the 70s, right?
Yeah, you know, and you and I talked about it. It's like, you know, Marvin was Jimmy and Jimmy was Marvin. And, you know, I think it was just, you know, it was his funny way of creating somebody that when things got, you know, things got real, it was Marvin doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely think it was Jimmy's kind of wild alter ego who was just, you know, drunked up and drugged up and just living that fast lane, fast life, really being a rock star, right? And like you said, in the 1970s.
You know, and I think it started before that, because, I mean, you know, what do you know about Marvin? And like, where you think it, from what you've read, like, where it started all?
So to my understanding, you know, the first account was early on in the late 60s, maybe even like 1970, with Steve Goodman down in Chicago. I read something that, you know, Steve went to one of these famous, you know, folk bars in Chicago. I think it was called the Tin Whistle Saloon. And, you know, he just went in one night. I think he was still kind of young. And really knew himself. So he would go watch a lot of, you know, the local artists or whoever was in town playing, you know, those nights. And he said that he went in and he watched this guy on stage who pretended or claimed that he had a peg leg. And he would do all these funny accents and he would go by the name of Marvin Gardens. So Steve thought to himself, you know, wow, that guy's really interesting, but he's really, you know, pretty good and funny. So Steve actually went back the next night because Marvin was playing a couple shows, and Steve said he got there early, and the announcer announced this guy, but it wasn't Marvin Gardens. It was a guy by the name of Jimmy Buffet.
So right, that's how they introduced him.
Yeah, and Steve Goodman was really confused and didn't understand, because he watched this guy for almost 2 hours the night before, you know, on stage telling people I'm Marvin and, you know, Marvin Gardens and all of that, and playing sets. And then he was introduced under a different name. So I guess the story goes Steve waited for him after the show, met up at the bar or whatever, and he was like, well, you're Marvin Gardens. And Jimmy was like, no, I'm Jimmy, you know? And he was like, well, then why do you go by Marvin? And the way, like, Steve explained it was a really, like, odd and weird interaction. And later in the conversation, he told Steve that he was Marvin again.
Right.
So, like, I don't know, man, how many drugs they were doing or how much they were drinking or, you know, if any of this story is even factual, right?
Well, it definitely seemed like Jimmy was like, he was probably, you know, messing with Goodman pretty good.
That's what it seems like to me. That's definitely my take on the story. But I mean, it would make absolute sense that these guys met and developed a friendship around 68, 69, and maybe even 1970, because Marvin, officially, Marvin Gardens appears in 1972 on Goodman's album Somebody Else's Trouble. So, for those who, you know, are familiar with the album, Obviously, this is the album art in Goodman's, you know, living room or house, and it includes Marvin Gardens standing next to, you know, another songwriting goat, John Prine. And I'm actually looking at the album right now because I have it hung up in my office here. So
nice. I actually, that's one of the few albums I have that's signed by Jimmy to me, which is pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That is pretty cool. Oh, man, that would have been really special if you had that also signed by John Prine and Steve Goodman.
Man, I wish. That'd be so cool.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that those guys sailed on, and definitely Steve sailed on a lot earlier than anybody wanted. So, but it's really important to kind of, you know, keep that great music and great songwriting alive. But so that was really the first kind of, I guess, public proof that Marvin Gardens exists.
Right.
Because he is not listed as Jimmy Buffett. He is definitely listed as
Marvin Gardens
on that album. And then honestly, man, friggin' year later, you know, a crowd favorite.
Why don't we get drunk and screw?
Why don't we get drunk and screw? You know, is written by Marvin Gardens in 73. And you read a little bit about the inspiration behind that song, right?
I did, you know, and if you actually look at the album itself, under the song title, it's credited to Marvin Gardens. Uh-huh. I know some people say that, you know, the reason that Marvin appears on some of the records is because of the record company. You know, Jimmy didn't want them knowing it was him or him writing this music. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but you know, the song itself is kind of standard. It's a parody of standard country music love songs.
Conway Twitty.
Yeah, you know, and he says it's total satire. You know, it's
of course
it was a joke, and they were fooling around. And I think they did it like in one take.
Yeah.
But it, you know, the song was controversial. I mean, back in 73, you know.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he says, yeah, I was hearing a lot of suggestive country songs. And there was one that I remember him talking about. I don't know if it was Norma Jean or Conway Twitty, but yeah, it was like, let's go all the way. And so his take was, you know, I'm going to write a song that's going to leave no doubt in anybody's mind what this song's about.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was some inspiration there from, you know, he was out eating somewhere. And some interaction between, you know, a businessman and a hooker.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how that song really came about. So, yeah. and it's funny because that's his biggest hit. Well, let me take that back. That's his biggest jukebox hit. I think it's the number one selling 45 out there for jukeboxes.
It is. And during the time, excuse me, a funny story was, you're right, it was a huge jukebox hit. But Jimmy didn't make any money off of it at the time. And the reason, to my understanding, was during that time period, the mob had control of all the jukeboxes.
Right.
And all of that money would filter back to the mob. So Jimmy was like, yeah, man, I was making all this money on the jukebox, but I didn't want to fucking, you know, say, hey, Carlos, where the fuck's my money? He's like, I didn't want to get in trouble. So he's like, man, you just kind of ate it. And that was the way that it was. And obviously, you know, it's funny, man. It's funny that song became such a huge hit, right? I mean,
and for it still a while, is to this day. It's like a crowd favorite at the shows.
It is. I mean, it was in the Big Ten, right? I guess now it's kind of like the Big 16 or whatever it is now, but the Big Ten, and it's just, to me, it's funny that even though we don't know where Marvin Gardens went or if he died, he kind of still lives on very much in the fandom, even more than probably a lot of people don't even realize.
Yeah.
Man, it was funny. I was at the Bethel show this past summer. You know, I went to go see Jimmy at Woodstock, and it was a great show and a great time. But I was wearing a Marvin Gardens shirt, and this lady, you know, came up to me and said, you know, why are you wearing a Monopoly shirt? And I said, oh, you know, it's Marvin Gardens, it's Jimmy's wild alter ego. And, you know, this was his nickname, and it's kind of funny. And she was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I was like, oh, that's cool, no worries. And, you know, then I was walking to the bathroom, and some guy was coming out, and he's like, Marvin fucking Gardens, man. He's like, that's some, he's like, that's some deep shit. That's awesome. And I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, totally.
I mean, I think that's just the fan base in general right there.
Yeah, of course, of course.
And so I don't know if we, you know, if that lady is listening to this, like, if we reach one person of understanding, man, then it's all worth it.
Marvin lives forever.
Marvin lives.
So, yeah, man. Anyway, in 1973, White Sport comes out, and Marvin is listed for playing beer cans and maracas. And funny enough, Steve Goodman is also playing acoustic lead guitar on that album. So it's a shame, man. As we said, you know, Steve Goodman sailed on, passed on way too early, way too young. But it would be really interesting now, right, if he were still alive, to hear his take, because, you know, from about 69 to 73 and beyond, it seemed like, you know, wherever there was Marvin, there was a Steve Goodman not too far behind him. And it makes you realize how good of friends they probably were.
Yeah, what they would have done, you know, over the next, you know, I mean, even 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, it is a shame that, you know, he died so young.
At this time, we ask that you please rise and join in the singing of our national anthem as sung by the popular recording star, Jimmy Buffett.
This is for Steve Goodman. Say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
So obviously, Twan, we talked about last episode. In the 90s, you know, you were pretty much there for the entire decade, right?
And yeah, my first show was 91. So yeah,
totally. And you know, I remember you telling me a story of, you know, a potential when you saw Marvin Gardens maybe come out just a little bit in the 90s. I believe you were at a small Margaritaville show and you were on the phone with your buddy.
Yeah, so that would have been probably like, I don't know, late 90s. And, you know, back then I knew the house band that was playing there, and the guy from the house band, this guy Gary Rowland from the Landsharks, they were the house band there, and they got the gig from playing Street Fest at Meeting in the Minds, and Jimmy showed up. And Jimmy was so impressed with this guy's, with this band, that he was like, you guys got, you know, I'm signing you as a house band at Margaritaville Orlando. So Gary would call me when, you know, Jimmy was coming to town. And yeah, he wouldn't say it out loud. He would just say, hey, you should probably come to the restaurant for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
And that was all he had to say. So, you know, he calls me one day. I roll up there that night for dinner, and I'm there from like, dude, like 7 to 10 o'clock. Yeah. You know, I'm eating the slowest dinner in the world.
Uh-huh.
And it's during the week. There's really nobody in there. And so 10 o'clock rolls around and I'm like, you know what? I'm like, he's not showing up. I'm like, I got to work tomorrow. So as I'm walking out, he's with somebody across the bar there in a different restaurant. And I'm like, holy shit, like there's Jimmy.
Yeah.
And so I swing around the corner. I walk in. Jimmy comes in and he plays with the house band.
Nice.
And like I said, you know, there's really not a whole lot of people. There was probably more wait staff there than there was actual patrons in the, you know, in the restaurant. It was late. It was Tuesday. So he starts playing, he's banging out a bunch of stuff. He doesn't even have an instrument. Like he's using one of Gary's guitars. Like he doesn't have anything. He just rolled in.
At this point, how either high or drunk are you?
Right now I'm definitely drinking.
You're drinking.
And yeah, my mind's blown that he's drinking, you know?
Yeah.
And, So anyway, so he's playing a little bit, and yeah. I got this, my buddy, we talked about him last time, my buddy Ponch. Yeah. I have this Nokia flip phone. And so I call Ponch up, and I'm holding the phone up. I'm waiting for Jimmy to start the next song because he's just talking.
Fucking flip phone.
Yeah. And I'm standing right in front. He looks over at me and he grabs the phone out of my hand.
Amazing.
And I'm freaking out, obviously. And so, yeah. You know, he starts talking to my buddy Chris. And he's like, "Hey, who's this?" And he's like, "Hey, what's up, Chris? This is the DEA." And he's like, "No, I'm kidding. It's Jimmy." And he's like, "What do you want to hear?" And everybody in the crowd's yelling a song. And Jimmy kind of puts the phone to his head, and he goes, "Brahma Fear." And he goes, "I don't think I've played that for 20 years." And he goes, "I don't know if I can remember that." Yeah. And all of a sudden, he gets like this puzzled look on his face, and he really starts paying attention into the phone. And after about, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds, he pulls the phone away and he kind of looks at the audience and says into the microphone, "He's singing me my song." So my buddy's on the other line singing him Brahma Fear.
Yeah.
And so Jimmy's Fear. Like, yeah, he's like, I think I can do it. And dude, he played the whole song. I don't think I'd heard it live up until then. Yeah. And, the funny thing is, 2 months later, he played in Tampa, and he played it after intermission, and played it the rest of the tour.
Wow! And
my buddy's always like, "Yeah, he's playing that because of me." Yeah. So, but it was like, you know, this raw Jimmy. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a perfect example of like Marvin Garden still kind of coming out there.
Yeah,
right. Because if you go back to these shows, you know, these bootleg shows in the 80s and in the 70s, you know, Jimmy was really interacting with the crowd. You know, he was changing up set lists. He was obviously doing things, you know, especially early on, acoustically. And dude, what I really love the most about some of the bootlegs, the older shows, is just his banter on stage, you know, and
it's the best. That's what makes those old shows so good.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause there's good set lists out there from, you know, from the 90s and 2000s.
Definitely.
That tour setting, like, you know, now everything's, it's the same story over and over. It's the same lines used. And back then it was like, dude, it was raw. And it was, that's the best part, is that banter.
Dude, I got to be honest though, man. Jimmy's going to, what is he, 75?
Yep.
Mid-70s. I mean, he doesn't remember a lot of that shit.
No.
You know, I mean, age one, but think about the amount of drugs and hard alcohol that he did for a long time.
I mean, you know? I still remembered what I did, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Exactly, man. Man, I didn't remember that we had a podcast tonight. No. The drugs are kicking in.
Drugs are kicking in now.
No, but anyway, man. So I was listening, you know, the other day, kind of researching a little bit for this thing, which is, you know, just such hard work. You know, it's just such hard work to research for these things. No, man, it's amazing.
And you learn stuff.
You learn stuff. You go back, you know. So it's really cool. But Marvin's perspective on religion comes up in, like, this is like, I think, 1974. And he talks about how for him, heaven is a cloud of cocaine and fountains of Jack Daniels and group orgies. And he's like, you know, if you're a really bad person, then you don't get to go do those things. And man, I was rolling. When I had to go back and I replayed it, and I'm like, did he just say all this? You know? And then people are, you can hear people laughing, you know, in the crowd and hooting and hollering. And then he goes on to talk about, you know, like the origins of Grapefruit Juicy Fruit. So I guess they were at the Islander drive-in. They hooked up a bunch of speakers to his friend's truck to like listen to the movies. But then his friends brought like acid and other drugs, and they were up till like 2 a.m. Swinging around on like these swing sets that I guess were at the theater park.
Yeah. I mean, there was always in the front row, man, there was always, you know, a swing set.
Yeah, and he said he had to get on a plane the next morning to go out to Houston for a show, and his flight was at like 9 or 10. So he's like, I'll hang out till like 2, 3 in the morning. And he says, you know, obviously that didn't happen. He actually didn't go to bed at all. And he was banging around his apartment, you know, trying to get his clothes and shit together to get on this plane at 10 a.m. to fly out. And he said he had the worst taste in his mouth, you know, and the only thing that he could grab out the door was a piece of juicy fruit, man. And stuck it in his mouth. And then he said later on, he wrote this song.
And it's one of his staples.
Yeah. You know?
And there's so much that happens in that song. You know,
yeah.
And it's, you know, one of the things that really, like, just, I don't know, it's something about Jimmy is when he sings a song, he puts you in a time and place, you
sure.
know?
Yeah.
And that's probably the coolest thing about his music, at least to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, great storyteller, great writer, and, you know, great writers create imagery with words. And that is why Jimmy, you know, at least for me, and I'm sure you agree, you know, one of the goats of all goats
yeah.
when it comes to songwriting, you know, and that talent. And speaking of songs, we get to about 1975 and the white, what he calls the token white token trash song is Please Take Your 15-Year-Old Drunken, you know, Girlfriend Home. He announces that at the boarding house. And to me, this is only a song that Marvin could pen.
Totally. And this, to me, this is like a song they probably did after hours, sitting in a living room, everybody fucked up. And
yeah.
he just started, you know, ad-libbing on a guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, originally, this song, though, was supposed to be on the Havana Daydreamin' album.
Right. Which was, it was actually called Kick It In was the working title of that album.
That's right, which was a play off the title track Kick It In the Second Wind, which
right.
was a song written by Jimmy and Jane, actually.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that I don't know if maybe this song, if you've listened to the song, you'd understand probably at that time and place.
Yeah.
I'm sure the record producers were like, yeah, this we can't put this out.
Yeah, we can't do it. And another song was cut from that album, Train to Dixieland, right?
Correct. That yeah. originally on that album.
All right, man. Go to Vault, Jimmy Vinyls. How many Havana Daydreamin' album copies do you have? And do you have the rare cuts with 15-Year-Old Girlfriend and Train to Dixieland?
So I have three copies.
Of course you do.
One is just the original press.
Yeah.
You know, ABC Records original press.
Is that mint? Is that mint condition?
No, my stuff's played.
Yeah,
I don't.
It's played. Okay.
You know,
I didn't know if you had. I didn't know if you had like one that was like in mint condition or something like that.
I mean, all my records are pretty mint. You know, but I mean, by no means is it a mint collection.
Yeah.
But so I do have that album. I found a couple of them. You know, through the last couple of years. And it looks identical to the normal release. But like you said, this one does have Please Take Your 15-Year-Old Girlfriend Home on the first side. And that replaces, if I'm not mistaken, Defying Gravity's track 5. And then track 1 of side A also has a slightly different version of Kick In Second Wind that replaces Woman Gone Crazy on side A.
Yeah.
Side B is the same. They say there's a version of it that does have Train to Dixieland on side B. I've never seen it, but there's enough chatter out there that I think there's two different versions of that.
Get out of the way.
Yep. And then I have the Japanese release, and then I also have the white label copy of it, white label promo copy of it. So I got four of them.
Can you read Japanese?
No.
Can you speak it?
No.
Wow. That's it's
I have it's one cool. Japanese I have one Japanese phrase. I swear this is true. Uh-huh. I don't know why I remember it. I used to work at a wakeboard camp back in the day, and we had these Japanese students, and they taught me Boku no Chinko Namite.
Okay.
And they said it means suck my dick.
Uh-huh.
So for years, that's what I thought it was. And probably 15 years later, I'm at a buddy's house that runs a ski school, and he's got four Japanese students there.
Yeah.
And I come into the room, I say the phrase, they all start rolling around dying. One of the guys actually spoke a little bit better English, and I'm like, what does it mean? He goes, it means, will you suck my dick? So I've been saying this, to Japanese people every time I meet one.
Oh, good God.
So,
wow.
Segue. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. speaking of just like craziness, I was talking to a former band member, and he said, you know, he was touring around with Jimmy, and this was like mid-70s, and it was his birthday. So they went out and they were at a casino. I don't know where, I forget. I'm assuming, you know, I don't know, Vegas, right? So they're out there, and it was his birthday, and, you know, Jimmy's playing a slot machine, and the band member walks over, and he's like, so Jimmy's like, what do you want to do? He's like, oh, I don't know, you know, it's my birthday, I don't know, just kind of hang out, let's go out. And he said, Jimmy hands him $100, and he's like, all right, well, like, what's this for? He's like, happy birthday, man, you know, go find yourself a hooker. And he's like, what? I'm in a rock and roll band with you, man. I don't need to pay. What are you talking about? You know? So I just thought that was a really fucking just funny moment, and a true kind of Marvin Gardens moment.
Right.
With that story. But man, if you research and people go back, if you go back to like the bootlegs, you know, you're gonna kind of hear bits and pieces. And you really try to kind of put all the stories together, because, you know, I would say all the way through, you know, till what, 1988, and we'll read the obituary at the end here, but, you know, there's mentions of Marvin throughout, you know, because I know that in 76, actually on the Havana album that we were talking about, Jimmy, you know, kind of says farewell to,
yeah, it's time for Marvin to go, you know,
it's time, says farewell to Marvin and friends. But I think personally that was kind of a cover up and just a way to kind of, you know, get rid of him. But I think that Jimmy's kind of, you know, that alter ego lived all the way through the late 80s until he really changed things.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, because then in 1983, when he's sued by Lord Buckley's son for recording God's Own Drunk, it's rumored that Marvin actually came back and wrote the song The Lawyer and the Asshole.
Which is a great song. It doesn't replace God's Own Drunk, but,
yeah,
you know, in those years, it was a perfect segue into it.
It was, and we talked a little bit about it, episode one of, you know, that one show you listen to, and Jimmy's handing out the guy's number,
yeah,
and he's got the ring girl with the poster, and just, you know, throwing out the little stuffed buddy bears, and just really wanting everyone to call this guy and give him a hard time for being such, you know, I mean, let's be honest, kind of a dick.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, his dad wrote the song, but, you know, to my understanding is that, you know, if you can get the rights, you can record a song. And to me, Jimmy's kind of paying tribute and paying honor, right? Because Lord Buckley was such a humorist. And I think, you know, if you really look at some of, you know, Jimmy's inspirations, you know, Lord Buckley will be one of them. And then you also look at somebody like Mark Twain, right? Who's also a humorist. And to me, Jimmy himself is a humorist, and a lot of that comes out on stage, even today. You know, like today, he kind of, you know, he does it in obviously a very different way. I would say today's show, you know, is very PG in some ways and very family friendly.
It right? is, because I mean, his audience has changed.
His audience has completely changed, and you know, it is, again, it is what it is. He's had,
and it's not a bad thing.
It's not. You know? It's not at all. No, it's not at all. You know, and he's had 40 plus years in the music business, and you know, times have changed. And you know, obviously things are not what they were in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, and as they, you know, shouldn't be. But you know, I think for me, I think every decade can be special in its own way.
And, you know, with Marvin too, it's like, you know, as we kind of read and dig into it, you start kind of seeing like the end of the end in like 88, 89. And, you know, I think we've talked about this, it's probably a turning point in his life, you know, where he's been going and probably said to himself, you know, or somebody or something happened that made him kind of say, you know, I need to change. I can't keep partying like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill myself.
To my understanding, it happened in around 87.
Right.
In Colorado. You know, I've heard from some really reliable sources that, you know, he was so hungover flying to Colorado that, you know, he felt like he was having a heart attack and,
right,
you know, kind of panicked. And, you know, I think that was a kind of pivotal moment, you know, in his life that he was like, I got to reassess things here. Yeah. And look, man, I'm glad that he did, you know, and I even, you know, Jimmy has been an inspiration in my life, you know, for many different reasons, but, you know, and I really do try to, you know, live an inspired life by him. You know, I really try to, you know, kind of live out some of those song lines in a really authentic way. Right. And I even look at Jimmy's life and his experience and, you know, I really see myself in it in some ways. And, you know, not that I was a rock star or anything like that, but, you know, I lived fast and I partied hard like Marvin for a long time. And there comes a point where you have to kind of shift gears a little bit, because if you don't, man, it catches up to you, you know? And for me, you know, and obviously a big part of songwriters is the whole cannabis component. And, you know, I really shift gears to just cannabis.
Right.
And that works for me at this point in my life, you know, and just like Jimmy has found balance in different things in his life. But I really pull inspiration from that. And, you know, I get it. And things have to evolve and have to change. Because, look, I mean, you look at somebody like Lowell George in Little Feat, right? I mean, he died of a heart attack in his hotel room from excessive hard drugs and excessive alcohol. And I think Jimmy probably counts his blessings. And considers himself lucky, because even around that time, he had close friends and crew members passing away.
Yeah.
You know, and at some point, and that's what you were saying earlier on, you know, is that rock and roll kind of crazy lifestyle. At some point, the gears have to shift or it could end in tragedy.
Yeah.
And,
you know, it's funny because when do they do the obituary?
I think the obituary, let's see, is 1989, which makes sense, right? Because 88 was Off to See the Lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's when a lot of the band also changed, like the Mayors came in. And I think, so 87 is Hot Water. That's also when Jimmy loses the, you know, iconic mustache.
Yeah, and also the music really shifted in a different
direction. It did. But dude, before we get into the obituary here, do you have your own Marvin moment?
I mean, there's definitely been, you know, I've had some fun times on tour with my buddy Craig, and
yeah.
Nothing crazy, but I mean, just having a good time and you know, on the road, enjoying the moment, drinking, you know, just, you know, going to a Buffett show.
Yeah.
You know,
well, dude,
the party side of it, like, You know, when I first started going to Jimmy concerts, my goal was to get just annihilated. And I was never a drinker to begin with. So, I mean, like four beers and I was like wasted. And yeah. I would probably say like the first 2 or 3 years of going to Jimmy concerts, like I would get so drunk and I'd always throw up. And I, you know, I'd wake up the next morning and it's like, I didn't remember half of it. You know, I don't remember the songs he played.
Yeah.
You know, I remember like snippets.
Yeah.
And I think it was around like probably 3 or 4 years into going to see him, I'm like, this isn't enjoyable. You know, right. So I'd have a few beers, I'd get buzzed, and I really started to enjoy it better instead of it just being a complete blur.
Yeah. No, of course.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think when you're younger, I mean, I was, what, 21, 22 back then.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, I learned right, you know, pretty quick on that it just wasn't no fun, you know. But yeah. What about you?
Oh, man, dude, I can think like one time I was in college, you know, and I was probably, you know, I was older in college because, you know, I played hockey and, you know, I went to boarding school and I repeated my high school years for hockey and then I played juniors. So I was like a 21-year-old freshman, you know, which is pretty like that's old, but it's kind of the norm in the whole kind of hockey universe.
Right.
So let's just say I was really popular with the freshman girls my freshman year in college because, man, everybody just came to me to buy them booze.
Right.
Obviously, and came to the hockey parties because we were all like old men, you know, hanging out. But so I went to school in New Hampshire and my college roommate was really close with a lot of guys at Boston College, a lot of guys that were on the Boston College hockey team. And I won't name names in this story, but there's a couple guys there that are actually in the NHL right now. And still playing and have had long successful careers. But so we went down for a weekend to visit Boston College and we went to go watch the hockey game. And then we were all going to go out after. And man, during the hockey game, I was sneaking in. I went sailing that night. I was an idiot. I drank Captain Morgan.
Oh,
man, fucking just brutal, right? I used to just drink like Captain and Cokes with lime, Captain and Cokes with lime. So I'm pounding Captain Morgan's, we leave the game and I'm like on gasoline, you know, yeah. I'm just full throttle, just absolute, just Marvin Gardens to the fullest, you know, out of my mind. I think I smoked opium that night. Somebody passed me something. And so we go back. We go to sleep, right? And I, dude, full disclosure, during this time period in my life, like when I used to drink a lot, I was known to like kind of sleepwalk sometimes, you right. know? Like one time I opened up my buddy's fridge and I like took out like all the bottles or something. And like his parents came down and was like, what is this? Like, what are you doing? So I don't remember it. And so, but I do remember this is that at some point, I came and became conscious, and I was standing in the middle of the street in just my boxer briefs. And mind you, it's Boston,
right?
And it's February.
It's freezing.
It's freezing, man. So I'm looking around, and there's all these dorm buildings and apartment buildings, and I'm like, I don't know where the fuck I am.
Hey, right? Was so, Miss McGill in one of them?
Yeah, Miss McGill.
Tea with Miss McGill. Anyway, go ahead.
Tea with Miss. Yeah, classic. So I'm like, fuck, man. So I'm running around, right? And mind you, it's probably like, I don't know, 3, 4 in the morning. So I'm running around. I'm freezing. I'm trying to get in, but everything's locked. And at one point, I kind of fall. I scrape my knee. Like, I'm just a fucking mess. It's actually embarrassing. And finally, like I find this one dorm room, like kind of dorm building. I rip open this one door, but you need it. So it was like a little kind of like hallway, but you
like
needed
a breezeway.
A breezeway.
Yeah.
And you needed your key to get in again.
Right in the second door.
Yeah. So I couldn't get through the second door, but this little, what'd you call it, a breezeway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was kind of warm. So I'm like, I'm standing there like rubbing myself, you know, because I'm just so cold. But I'm like, oh, this feels good because it's warm and maybe somebody will let me in. So I'm pulling on the door again, rubbing myself. And next thing I know, I see, burp, you know, fucking flashing lights. And I'm like, oh, shit. This ain't going to be good. So it was campus police. And they're just like, what are you doing? You know, why are you here? Why are you just in your underwear? So I ended up explaining to them, you know, I was with my friends and, you know, a couple of my friends were on the hockey team. So they're like, who are your friends? So I gave them the names and they're like, oh, we know him. We'll bring him back to your apartment. So I'm sitting in the back and these guys are like the nicest guys in the world. And they finally take me back. And the only reason that I remembered that it was my buddy's dorm room, because they opened the door, I saw all of my clothes and my shoes next to the futon. And they were like, is this it? I was like, yep. Thank you, officers. See you later. I'm out of here. I woke up the next day, had all these scrapes. I told my friends, they're like, no fucking way. They're like, that did not happen. I'm like, it happened. They're like, no, we put you to bed. It didn't happen. But it definitely did happen. And I haven't been back to Boston College since then.
Since then. That is a true Marvin moment.
Oh, man. It's fucking crazy, man. And, you know, there's so many more stories like that, but I'll save those for other episodes because, you know, hey, you just never know when we're going to kind of just go haywire here and just go off topic.
For sure. So that's a great segue probably into talking about this obituary.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I would say my Marvin Gardens probably died
that night.
Maybe that night. No, I think there was a good 15 more years of Marvin and me after that night. So yeah, man, why don't you go ahead and take the first half here and then I'll take us home here.
All right. So from my understanding, you know, this was printed in the Sarasota Herald Tribune.
That's
April,
right.
April 1st, 1989. So fitting that it's April 1st, you know, it's a fool's joke. Some people say this was somebody from the band put this out. I've heard that this does, in fact, not exist, that it's not in that paper. So I guess it's what you make out of it, you know, but somebody wrote this out. And basically it goes on to say, you know, legendary entertainer Marvin Gardens dead at 42. Marvin Gardens, the wry and witty singer-songwriter noted for his risque lyrics on life and on the edge, died of a massive coronary today at Sarasota Rock and Roll Rest Home. According to the statement released by the Sarasota County Coroner's Office and officials at the home, he was 42. Marvin Gardens, best known for the song Why Don't We Get Drunk, which was popularized by singer Jimmy Buffett in the early 70s, was an early influence in the gonzo style of music that included Jerry Jeff Walker, the late Steve Goodman, and Mr. Buffett. Gonzo is a term borrowed from author Hunter S. Thompson. Describes the crazy, almost insane lyrics and tunes of some of the late 60s and early 70s post-folk melodies.
Yeah.
Mr. Gardens has been in the home permanently since a 1981 stroke, which ironically occurred on the same day that his old music partner, Buffett, released his Somewhere Over China LP. Reports indicated that Mr. Gardens was listening to a promotional copy of Mr. Buffett's Off to See the Lizard released when he declared, oh no, this can't be happening. Who writes this shit?
It's great.
He collapsed and was pronounced dead by the resident physician at the home.
Fucking wise guys. It's funny though.
Mr. Gardens, the scion of prominent Atlantic City, New Jersey family, had not performed in public in some time.
Yeah.
He is credited on several of Mr. Buffett's albums, as well as pictured on the cover of Mr. Goodwin's Somewhere Else with Trouble that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's right.
His early collaborations with Mr. Buffett were in New Orleans in the 60s. While the two had a falling out over Buffett's decision to drop the controversial song Gardens had reportedly penned for his Havana Daydreamin' LP, the two had partly reconciled, although there were no plans to reinstate Gardens in the Coral Reefers for the upcoming tour or any other. So,
yeah, and it says, you know, in closing, you know, reached for comment in Los Angeles, Mr. Buffett stated that some people don't even know how close Marvin and I used to be. I'll miss him. We were so very close, he added. It sort of became an on-running joke, you know, with fingers and me. He used to call him my alter ego. It got so bad that some people wondered if there was actually two people or just one of us. Kind of like Batman and Bruce Wayne, that sort of thing. Recalling their early adventures, Buffett recounts, I'd often sign in the hotel under Marv's name. Marvin never could figure out why the Holiday Inn lawyers kept sending him all those certified letters. And then it goes on to say, Mr. Garden's remains will be cremated and spread over the chart room bar where his closest friends will do lines of his remains. This is invitation only. He has no known survivors. Some believe this is just a cover-up, and Marvin is actually in a retirement home down south with an IV of Gatorade in his arm and mixing purple passions.
I mean, the fact that somebody sat down and wrote this out, I think it really goes to show you that, you know, Marvin was a true character, you know, and people that are really into Buffett know this story, you know? Yeah. So obviously this is somebody, I don't know if maybe this was one of the guys that, you know, was one of the moderators or administrators over at the Church of Buffett.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw it on their page at some point in the late 80s.
Totally, man. And if anyone out there is listening to this and like knows those guys or any of those guys and could put us in contact, you know, I would just love to connect with some of these guys. Because to me, you know, some of this literature and like you said, what they wrote down, are really kind of pioneers as far as kind of documenting the folklore and really kind of bringing some literature about and some resources about Marvin.
And about Buffett's early career, like those, you know, that website had like the best information on it. And it's a shame it's not out there anymore because, I mean, I was, you know, it's the same as now, you know, with Buffett News and Buffett World, like, it's stuff that I look at on a daily. And that's what, you know, the Church of Buffett was like. So, yeah, I would love to. It'd be great to connect with those guys if they're still out there.
Oh, I definitely would, man. And, dude, I got to say, man, just love, again, shooting the shit with you, hanging out, you know, always a good time. I'm excited for, you know, some of the episodes coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Songwriters is growing every day. So thank you to everyone, you know, who's been listening to this, who's been contributing to the community on Facebook. It's just getting really exciting and I'm excited for the future.
It's fun. You've been doing a great job with songwriters and just to see it grow in the feedback for people and people that are contributing on a daily. You know, just it tells you that you're doing something kind of cool out there. So it's it's been fun to be, you know, along for the ride.
No, definitely. So yeah, man. So everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of The Fool Button. You know, we have a blast doing these, and we really appreciate the support. And party on, Tuan.
Cool, party on, Jay. I can't wait to do this again, man. I'm looking forward to see what the next topic's going to be.
All right, man. Sounds good. Right. Catch you later.
Have a good one, brother.
Thanks for listening to the Fool Button Podcast presented by the Songwriters Joint. Follow the Songwriters Joint on Facebook and Instagram for amazing content that features Marvin Gardens and all of his songwriting friends. Let's get together.